The sun rose above him as he passed for Neil, and he was limping because of his hip.
All right. Thank you, Johnny. Can we go ahead and give it up for the students really quick this morning? I mean, greeting his people, reading his word, leading his people in worship. Can we also take a quick second to celebrate Jennifer Voigt? I don't know where she went, but she's in here somewhere. Oh, hey, I found her. Her and Esther spend so much time just pouring into the students, both as musicians and as people. And they're the reason that we're able to have a fully student-led band worship every week. And so thank you guys so much for everything you do. I really appreciate it. If we haven't met, my name is Seth, and I have the honor of being your Director of Student Life Ministries here at FPC. I've always been a pretty active guy. I have a really hard time sitting still. I played T-ball as a kid. I've done Taekwondo for almost 20 years now. I drove race cars competitively for like every weekend. I do CrossFit and obstacle course races now. I really just like being active. And so in eighth grade, I joined the wrestling team over at McKeel High School, who, by the way, just had their first state champion in school history. Go Wildcats. And fun fact, it was actually through wrestling at McKeel that I met Brian Morgan, who was my wrestling coach at the time, as well as my health teacher. Everyone say aw. All right. You can tell, this was like 13 years ago. You can tell because I dress slightly better and his beard has more gray hair in it now. But he's watching online. He would laugh. Don't worry. He would think that's funny. And so what happened was a friend of mine at the end of seventh grade was like, hey, you should join the wrestling team. Like, you can get in shape, because I was in shape. That shape just happened to be round. And so that was the plan. I was like, oh, this will be great. I can get in shape and I can be like John Cena. Turns out it was not that kind of wrestling. And so I wasn't necessarily all that good at wrestling. I didn't win a single match my entire first year. I had like two moves that I knew how to do, and that was it. But I got away with a lot of matches that I probably should have lost just by being stronger than the other person or faster. I was able to get away with things that I should have lost against people way more technical than I was. And so guess what happens? My ninth grade year, 1 week before districts, I break my ankle. Everyone go, aw. Thank you. And so the end of ninth grade year, which is when that picture of me and Brian was, after that year, so my entire 10th grade year, that was when Brian left teaching to become the student ministries director here. And so I was like, well, my ankle hurts and Brian's not going to be there, so like, why even keep wrestling? And so we took all of 10th grade off. And then come 11th grade, I started to have that thought of like, man, what if I go back? What if I give wrestling another shot, you know? And so we did. This time I was doing so 35 pounds heavier to give everyone else a head start, you know, to really even the playing field. And so 1 week before districts, yet again, we're playing a game called ankle tag. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's tag, but it only counts if you tag their ankle. I was really bad at this game because you're supposed to like crawl around on your hands and knees and tag people. I wasn't fast like that. And so I decided to cheat. Clearly, I know. And so instead of crawling around, if someone got near me, I would just get up and like run away, you know, and then go back to like playing correctly. I should have just gotten out because this was the end of practice. As soon as you got out, you could go home. Like, I could have been done. I wasn't that interested in this game anyway, but I had accidentally cheated my way into the final three. And so I was like, well, we're going to see this through. We're going to commit all the way. And so we end up with three of us left. The other two decide to team up on me. One starts to chase me. I go running, and what can only be described as truly like cartoon level luck happens. The other one dives in my foot. I go to jump over him because I'm a good teammate. I don't want to step on him. And so he reaches up, kind of catches my foot. I spin in the air. My foot gets caught on a wall. My knee gets sandwiched between my body and said wall. And then pop, pop, pop. I have now torn my ACL, my MCL, my meniscus. I chipped part of my fibula, which is not your shin bone, it's the one right next to it, and I dislocated my kneecap. My coach, not Brian, different coach, was like, oh, you're good, walk it off. I was like, coach, my kneecap is like over here right now. Like, my knee is sideways, I can't exactly walk it off. I'll save you the other gross details. But yeah, tore everything. My surgeon said, hey, if you're going to do it, like, do it all the way, you know? Like, we're already cutting your knee open, you might as well tear everything. And so we did. And so then what happens is my entire wrestling career is over, just like that. 1 week before districts, one injury, and I now miss the remainder of my junior year, never got to wrestle at districts. I missed my entire senior year, so my senior year ended before it even began. and went through 9 months of physical therapy after said surgery. It was not fun physically or mentally, but during that time, it was really difficult. As an added bonus, actually, I have an arthritic knee at age 26, and it aches every time a cold front comes in, so we have that going for us. What else could you ask for, you know? Who needs the Weather Channel? So I tell you all this today because we're going to look at someone else who gets injured wrestling and whose life gets radically changed because of it. So context leading up to this point in our passage, Jacob is the son of Isaac, who was the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Israel. If you grew up in church, you know the song. For the sake of it not getting stuck in our heads, I won't sing it. You're welcome. Jacob had an older brother named Esau, and he spent a lot of his life struggling with that birth order. Esau was the manly man. He was hairy. He hunted. Jacob was not hairy and stayed inside with his mom. And because Esau was older, he got the blessing and the inheritance. He had the birthright, which his mom wanted Jacob to have, because Jacob was her favorite. If you were here last week, Pastor Zach talked about how Jacob cheated Esau, how he convinced him to, he tricked him into trading his entire birthright and inheritance for a bowl of soup. And so fearing his now ticked off older brother, Jacob spends the next 20 years on the run. And during that time, he meets a man named Laban, falls in love with his daughter Rachel, and agrees to work 7 years to marry the daughter Rachel. But we reap what we sow, and Laban cheats and tricks Jacob. He works the 7 years and then gets married to Leah, the older sister, because Laban says, you know, we can't, in our tradition, the older daughter has to get married first. You have to marry Leah. If you want to marry Rachel, you need to work 7 more years. So he does. So he works 14 years, is now married to both sisters. Nothing bad could happen there. And eventually, he decides he wants to go home to his father, Isaac. But then Laban finds out and chases after him. So now Laban is on the run again, this time from his father-in-law. Great family dynamics that Jacob has going on for him here. On the run from his brother, his father-in-law. He's married to like two sisters. It's going great for him. And Laban eventually catches up to him, and they hash things out. They make up, and that's where our story picks up today. And so in Genesis 32, this is what happens immediately next. It says, Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named the place Mahanaim. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, "This is what you are to say to my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban and have remained there till now. I have cattle and donkeys, sheep and goats, male and female servants. Now I am sending this message to my lord that I might find favor in your eyes." So Jacob sends his servants ahead of him to kind of test the waters with Esau. He's like, hey, let's go see, like, is he still mad? Like, it's been a while. Maybe he's mad. Maybe he's not. Depending on how this goes is what I'm going to do next. And so let's see what the servants come back and say. In verse 6, it says, when the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, "We went to your brother Esau, and now he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him." In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and herds and camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. So, I don't know about you, but if you came to me and said, hey, Seth, like, you know how you cheated Rambo, like, 20 years ago? Well, he's coming with 400 other dudes to meet you in the woods right now. I'd be scared. And Jacob is, too. In verse 7, it says he was in great fear and distress. Dude's panicking. And so he divides his family and his stuff into two groups. So that way, if Esau destroys one group, at least the other one, like, he'll still have that. Real selfless guy Jacob is, you know. And so then Jacob spends some time in prayer. He asks God to please spare him and his family from Esau. And then he comes up with a plan. He's going to try and calm Esau down with the payment plan of gifts sent in multiple installments. And so let's look at what all he sends to Esau. It says, he spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows and 10 bulls, and 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. He put them in the care of his servants, each herd by itself, and said to his servants, "Go ahead of me and keep some space between the herds." He instructed the one in the lead, "When my brother Esau meets you and asks, 'Who do you belong to, and where are you going, and who owns all these animals in front of you?' then you are to say, 'They belong to your servant Jacob. They are a gift sent to my lord Esau, and he is coming behind us.'" He also instructed the second, the third, and all the others who followed the herds. You are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. And be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind us. Don't forget that part. For he thought, I will pacify him with these gifts I am sending on ahead. Later, when I see him, perhaps he will receive me. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. So he sends hundreds and hundreds of animals. Why? Again, if you were here last week, Esau, he's on the creatine. Jacob is built like Steve Urkel. It's not going to go well if Esau is mad and wants to throw hands with him. If Esau wants to fight, Jacob's done. And so now we get to what Johnny read earlier. Actually, really quick. It's important to note, right? He keeps saying, like, hey, be sure to tell him, and I'm going to send him all these things. Why? He's trying to calm him down. It says he's trying to pacify him. If you think, like, if you ever messed up as a kid and, like, broke something at home, and you're like, oh, my parents are on their way home, I'm going to clean the house, I'm going to, like, cook them some dinner, like, maybe, like, it'll be okay, maybe they won't be mad. That's Jacob's whole plan right now. He's like, I'm going to give him all these gifts, I'm going to bribe him into not being mad at me. And so now we get to where Johnny read earlier. Jacob sends his wives and his stuff across the river, and then seemingly out of nowhere, he starts wrestling with God. It's kind of weird. So for fun, we ask the students, hey, if I told you somebody went one-on-one against God, if they took God on one-on-one, how do you think that would go? And so take a look at the responses.
If you somebody 1v1 God, how would you think that would go?
I think they lose very badly.
1v1 a guy?
So oh, God. 1v1 against God.
Oh, no, they lose very badly.
I think they're going to get folded in half like a pancake and
not going to do very well. So, yeah.
God is like infinitely powerful and they aren't and we need him. So I don't know how they would possibly win.
They'd be frightened because God just wins.
They'd lose. I mean, like really bad.
If I told you somebody went 1v1 against God, how do you think that would go?
I don't think that would end pretty well for that person. I mean, God with his almighty power, it'd be impossible to beat him.
If I told you somebody went 1v1 against God, how do you think that would go?
They would lose.
Yeah,
they'd lose.
Why?
Oh, because he's the strongest. He's amazing.
If I told you somebody went 1v1 against God, how do you think that would go?
Bad.
If I told you somebody went 1v1 against God, how do you think that would go?
He's not prepared for that. How do we think that would go? It wouldn't go for them because he can control everything.
Yeah, like you're never gonna beat him
because he's all powerful.
Yeah. He's just the one. Like I don't know how to say it. Like you won't beat him.
Probably didn't work.
Why?
Because nobody can really wrestle with God.
If I told you somebody went 1v1 against God, how do you think that would go for them?
They'd get eviscerated, atomized, but 1v1 against God? I can't even wonder how bad it'll go for them.
Oh, man. Don't you just love the bluntness? Right, I'm with Will. Jacob would get obliterated here. But that's not what happens. And so let's take a look and see how it all goes down. It says, that night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. Jacob said, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. So So Jacob's alone. He's worried about Esau, and so he's wrestling with his thoughts, and soon after, he's wrestling with God. And so depending on who you ask, some will say this is God, some will say this is an angel he wrestles with, others will say it's a pre-incarnate Jesus. And I think it's cool because he asks Jacob his name, and then he gives Jacob a new name. It's very similar to how Jesus renamed Simon to Peter, Abram gets renamed to Abraham, Sarai to Sarah, Saul to Paul, etc., etc. And so it makes you wonder, does God ask Jacob his name as a reference to stealing Esau's blessing? The last time Jacob was asked his name, he lied and responded with his brother's name. His father was like, all right, who is this? And because he couldn't see. And he was like, oh, I'm Esau. And he wasn't Esau, spoiler alert. He was Jacob still. And so isn't it the nature of God, though, to ask us questions as we're wrestling with him? Jacob is wrestling and demanding, and God asks two questions. What is your name? And why do you ask my name? Right, he's trying to draw out Jacob's heart. He's trying to draw his heart out with these questions. And Jacob was so anxious about Esau that fear drove him to wrestle God. And he wrestled his way into trust. His faith refused to let go of him. So he clung to God. And in that wrestling, he demands to be blessed because he wants to be in control and he wants the certainty. Right? It's a lot easier to be stubborn than it is to be faithful. It's way easier being stubborn than it is being faithful. And so where is that true for you? Where in your life are you like, man, I'd rather be stubborn than be faithful to God right now. I'd rather be stubborn than depend on him. I'd rather be stubborn than trust him. Where's that true for you? Right? God's transforming Jacob. He's not avoiding that. He's being reshaped into it. He's being reshaped into trust. And so much like any dad with their kid, God lets Jacob win. And they wrestle all night long in what looks like a stalemate. But you can tell that God let him win, that he could have won at any time. Because as soon as he wants the match to end, he touches Jacob's hip and dislocates it. And I think Jacob recognizes this, right? Because he names the place Peniel because he says, it's because I saw God face to face and yet my life was spared. No one says I was spared if they think they won. You know, like if I wrestle with Corbin, I'm not going to be like, if I think I like won, I'm not going to be like, man, Corbin really spared me there. No, I'm going to be like, bro, I won. I beat him. Done. But he's like, no, like my life was spared there. He understands. God let him win. And I think it's cool because God doesn't overpower us. But he will give us things that remind us we need him. God doesn't overpower us, but he will give us things that remind us that we need him. Paul had a thorn in his side. Moses had a speech impediment. Jacob now has his hip. And so for the rest of Jacob's life, he has a limp in his hip as a reminder of the night that he encountered and experienced God. And I think the same is true for most of us. I know it's true for me. When I tore my knee, my identity was torn with it. Right? When my knee was torn, my identity got torn right with it. Because up to that point, my self-worth was based entirely in my athletic ability. But then for 9 months, I couldn't run. I couldn't jump. For the first month, I couldn't put pants on by myself. Like, it could no longer be in my own abilities because I didn't have any. And so during that time, I had a lot of time to spend in solitude. Like Jacob, I was alone. But it was in that solitude that I found and came to the Lord. And so today, fun fact, I still have like a titanium screw in my leg, just below my knee. And yeah, and if something bumps into it, it's this really awful sensation that I don't know how to put into words. It ruins my entire day. Like a razor scooter is my kryptonite. Like it's over if I take a razor scooter to the knee. But that screw in my knee serves as my reminder of the time that I encountered and experienced God. Right, that screw, as uncomfortable as it is, it's a reminder of God in the time that I encountered and experienced him. And the thing is, everyone who encounters God comes away changed. Nobody comes face to face with God and stays the same. Right, look at verse 32. It's a new day. Jacob has a new name, and he's a new man. He gets the gift of his limp as a reminder of the night he met God. And so you're like, well, Seth, what do you mean, like, limping is a gift? That sounds weird. Here's another cool thing. When someone has a limp or walks on crutches, what's the first thing everyone asks them? What happened? No one does that if you're not limping, right? I don't just like randomly walk up to Garrett and go, Garrett, what happened? He's gonna be like, what do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? What happened? No, that happens because if someone's on crutches or has a limp. And so the limp is what gives us the opportunity to share what has happened to us. Jacob forever gets to tell the story of the night he wrestled with God. I forever get to tell the story of meeting God through rehabbing my knee. The limps that we have are chances to share what God has done in our lives. Right? The limps that we all have are chances to share what God has done in our lives. And so we never talked about what happens when Jacob and Esau do finally meet in the woods. And so let's take a look at what happens. Jacob looked up, and there was Esau, coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two female servants. Pay attention to what order everyone's in now. He put the female servants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. "Who are these with you?" he asked. Jacob answered, "They are the children God has graciously given your servant." Then the female servants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, "What is the meaning of all these flocks and herds I met?" "To find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, "I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." "No, please," said Jacob, "if I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me, for to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Now that you have received me favorably, please accept the present that was brought to you. For God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need." And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. Then Esau said, "Let us be on our way. I'll accompany you." And what I love is Jacob's not suddenly perfect. He doesn't go point A to point B. He's still selfish, right? He still plays favorites. He puts his favorite wife and his favorite child in the back just in case. But his position changes. He's no longer in the back. He's at the very front. He goes out to meet him. And so what does Esau do? He runs up to Jacob, hugs him, kisses him, and they cry. He's excited to meet his sister-in-laws and his nieces and nephews. He tells Jacob he doesn't need all the gifts that were sent to him because he has plenty. He has all that he needs. He only takes them because Jacob insists. And what I think is cool is that Jacob's motivation for sending the gifts has changed. It went from just being like, "Hey, maybe Esau won't shove me in a locker if I give him these things," to now it's like, "No, because he was gracious to me, I want to give him these things." There's a sense of gratitude with Jacob now. He says, "Seeing your face is like seeing the face of God," which he just did the night before. Again, nobody comes face to face with God and stays the same. It's because Jacob came face to face with God that he's now able to come face to face with Esau. Jacob is able to come face to face with Esau because he has already come face to face with God. And so maybe you're here today and you feel like you're wrestling with God. I want you to know that's okay. I think he's closer than you realize. He wants to be with us more than we want to be with him. Right? The times that we're going through it the most are the times that he's the nearest to us, because those are when we finally stop trying to do everything ourselves. He's with you in your wrestling. Right? God is with you in your wrestling. Jacob wrestles with God, not against him. Psalm 34:18 says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." Some of us in here today may feel crushed in spirit. Life's hard. Right? There's wars, there's famine, there's disease, there's death, there's injustice, and plenty of other heartbreaking things. But the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. If I could take a second, provide some quick encouragement. Just out of curiosity, who suffered the most on earth? Sunday school answer, guys. Jesus, right? Who lived the most beautiful life ever? Yeah, the two go hand in hand. Don't be shocked when life is hard. Jesus limps to the cross. Like, that's part of life. Like, limping is part of it. Why do I think my life's going to be easy? Suffering is part of the design. It should draw us closer to God, not push us further from him. Right? Suffering should draw us closer to God. It shouldn't drive us further from him. It's part of his design. Those nights when you're lying in bed or maybe on your bathroom floor, when you're sitting in your car running your hands through your hair or pacing through your kitchen, don't run from those things. And, like, cling to him in that. I know those things feel awful, but they're a fellowship of his sufferings. They're reminders of him. Right? Everything exists to point us to God. Good and bad. Everything exists to point us to him. Why is the sky blue? So that I'll believe in him. Why did you get a promotion? So that you'll believe in him. Why is there war? So you'll believe in him. Why does Jacob's hip get dislocated? So that he'll believe in him. The best things that happen to us and the worst things that happen for us exist to draw us closer to him. Right? The best things that happen to you and the worst things that happen for you exist to draw you closer to God. Jacob gets to live in the reality of that. Right? Can we do the same? Would you guys grab a hand or a shoulder or whatever's like less creepy? I trust you to figure that out. Would you join me in prayer? Lord, thank you so much for this morning. I pray if I've said anything today that goes against you and your word, that you would, men in black, flash thing, wipe that from our memories, Lord. But if I've said anything that lines up with you and your word, that you would gorilla glue it to our minds, Lord. Thank you for the reminders of you, that everything exists to remind us of you. So often we'll ask for signs, God, but everything around us has your unique fingerprint on it. From the trees, to the tides, to the people that we meet, the people all around us, Lord, all of it exists to remind us of you. Thank you for all the good things that happen to us, Lord, that remind us of your goodness. And thank you for all the bad things that happen that remind us of our need for you. That all of those things are chances for us to invite other people into your presence, Lord. That we get to share what you've done through us. To invite other people in. And that what you've done through our brokenness, Lord. Thank you that you're always with us, even in our wrestling. I pray that we'd be faithful to you in everything we do, Lord. That we wouldn't be stubborn and lean on our own understandings, Lord. But that we would trust you in everything. Thank you so much for this time together, Lord. I pray that you would guide us today, this week, all the days of our lives, Lord. We love you. Pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.